Hey guys, this is Colt Cabana, the host of the Art of Wrestling podcast. But right now, you're listening to another wrestling podcast. Not another one, but that's the actual name. Another wrestling podcast.
It's time for another wrestling podcast.
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at
the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
They got the answers. I changed the question.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
These are the best in the world, brother. These are the best at what they do.
When we talk about the legends of the sport, there's only two in my book.
Another wrestling podcast.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome to another wrestling podcast. I'm Credo.
And I'm Angry Cooter, the social assassin.
And this is episode 132.
I'm still not fired.
I think you've made tenure now, so I don't think anything can happen or is going to happen.
Just can't get rid of me. I know.
He's here. But guys, stay tuned. We're going to have on the Godfather of Wrestling podcast, we're going to have Colt Cabana joining us. He's going to be talking to us about Wrestling Road Diaries 3, which is coming out, so stay tuned for that one. This time next week, we're going to have a new president-elect of the United States. Now, for anybody out there who's been following this, it's almost been booked like a WrestleMania lead up to it. You know, there's chaos, there's controversy, there's drama, there's anything and everything. It's like, who's been booking this match, Cooter? I figure instead of getting into who's voting for who and get out the vote and whatnot, I say screw it. I say, let's book the match, Cooter. Let's book them in a Mania-esque match. Who's going to win and why? Give me the matchup, Cooter. How would you book Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton in a match?
We got to do no DQ with a special guest referee. And I pick myself, Angry Cooter, who, just decides to German suplex both of them into the ground until neither of them can get up. So there is no winner, because no matter who wins this election, there will be no winner, Credo.
All right. Well, here, let me throw this at you. Okay. We're gonna do it. We just came off Hell in a Cell, so why not? Let's keep it going. We'll have a four quadruple main event
now. Oh, fantastic!
So now we got Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, in Hell in a Cell as the main event. We're gonna have a special guest referee, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, is gonna be the ref for this one. We know a little bit about Donald Trump's history with the WWE, but we haven't seen what Hillary Clinton can do. So regardless of what happens during that match, the final outcome is that Hillary Clinton is going to get the one, the two. Nope. Vincent Kennedy McMahon gives her the stunner.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
Vince McMahon pins both of them, declaring himself the rightful person to win, the rightful president of the United States. So that's just a little quick matchup of how we could book a Trump versus Clinton matchup.
I don't know if that's any better than, wow. Yeah, I mean, just think of it. We have Hillary, Donald. If you're a Hillary supporter, you hate Donald Trump. If you're a Donald Trump supporter, you despise Hillary. Once the dust settles, you have Vincent McMahon, who has done the most dastardly shit on television, the president. Only you would think of that, Credo. Come on now.
That's it, man. Well, hey, either way, a lot of things are going to happen. So hopefully we'll see what happens. Next week, we're going to have a new president elect, so we'll see what happens. Regardless, guys, if you're listening to us, you can also see us this weekend. We're going to be at Northeast Wrestling in Waterbury, Connecticut.
Yes. Looking forward to that show for sure.
We're going to be there. It's been moved. It's going to be at the Waterbury PAL building in 64 Division Street, Waterbury. It's a fundraiser to benefit the Waterbury PAL. Guys, if you haven't got your tickets, you can head on over to northeastwrestling.com. Pick them up. Or probably pick them up at the door. But regardless, AWP is going to be at Autumn Ambush this Saturday. So make sure you head on out there. Say hi to us. We're going to be filming a video and all that fun stuff. All right, Cooter, it's been another busy week. So let's get right into the week that was. We just came off of Hell in a Cell, and without going through the whole pay-per-view, I'm not going to give you a little roundup about it. We had a triple main event, but at the end of the night, there was only one main event, and that was Sasha Banks versus Charlotte Flair for the Women's Championship, the Raw Women's Championship. Now, Cooter, this is the first ever Women's Hell in a Cell match, first ever Women's Main Event. I know they're afraid to say main event, but it was the last match of the night. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the main event.
They headlined that card. They stole the show. There's nothing you can say to make me feel like this match was bad in any way.
Well, I'm going to nitpick anyway, regardless.
Of course.
I got to bring it up.
You had to be that guy.
I got to bring it up. You got to play devil's advocate. You got to get both sides going here. So regardless, I was entertained. I enjoyed it. But I'll tell you what, a few things I was rolling my eyes at. And one of the things was she did a spot not even halfway up the cell. Landed on the table, we brought up the paramedics, yada, yada, yada. They were going to give the title to Flair, and no, she fought back into the cell so the match could officially start. That was, I don't think that was even needed. I would have told you, though, if I would have had her book that match, what I would have done was have them start at the top of the cell. I'm not saying go through it or anything. Just fight a little bit. Entice that crowd because people are just going to be talking. You're having the two women at the top of the cell. Then as they start to work their way down, then I could see them both fighting on the side of the cell. And then they both, you know, do a spot and then they both land on that table. So that would have been awesome. That would have been a great introduction to the match. But regardless, I know they didn't want them going up that high. They didn't, you know, they didn't want to do anything too crazy, but I was a little bit, this is like, it was the same exact spot that Foley did with Taker and the whole thing fighting back and whatnot, so.
All right, let me say this, man. I'm going to say two things. First off, you can't set the bar too high for the first ever Women's Hell in a Cell.
That's what I think they were trying to do, almost. They were like, they're going to throw out all the stops.
They set the bar, but they didn't set it too high, because down the road, there's going to be a feud that's probably just as crazy, if not crazier, if not even the same feud, where they do this all over again. And now we can do something on top of the cell. We can make it more exciting, because you can't throw everything in the kitchen sink out there, you know, the first time out, because then you're going to be bored to tears unless somebody dies in a ring. That's what you want.
I don't want anybody to die.
Can't be patient. But here's the other thing. I mean, I was listening to Busted Open on Sirius today. Ric Flair was on, and he said that they did take two spots out of that match, and he wouldn't elaborate on what they were, but rest assured, one of them didn't involve a moonsault. Now, whether that's on top of the cell, which I would hopefully think that, Charlotte's not that crazy, but that's what was said on air. So, I mean,
all right. Well,
I really have to say, I mean, the ending, all right, there might have been a little bit of a botched spot, but you really can't take away from the ring psychology and the blood, sweat, and tears.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, definitely. I'll tell you what, the botched spot, so let me talk about that really quick. Now, did they use the wrong table? Because there was that one spot in the corner where Charlotte fell on the table on the outside and it busted open or whatever. Then the ending where Sasha was thrown onto the table, and she wasn't really thrown too hard, but she was like thrown on it and then rolled off.
Ragdolled, yeah.
And, you know, it was just like, oh, well, everybody was confused. Like, really? That was the ending? I figured they would have some kind of sequence better than what they did. But regardless, that's nitpicking. I mean, it was still a great match. We enjoyed it. Had fun. Definitely, I mean, for the first women's match in the cell, for main eventing, like, I wasn't even saying, like, oh, I don't want to watch this. The women are main eventing. Like, these two women wrestling at this day and age was a great main event. And I hope WWE can get past saying, oh, a triple main event, because, you know, we have to have the mid-card title as a main event, and we have
next
to have
next year we got
to
top it. It's going to be a quintuple main event. There'll be five Hell in the Cells, you know, and I'm sure your buddy James Ellsworth will be in them. But let me ask you this. what did you like better, Rollins and Owens, or did you like Rusev and Reigns better?
I did not think Rusev and Reigns needed a cell at all. They could have just had a regular match, and I would have been fine with it. I don't think they could even have, like, a ladder match, a gimmick match, a chairs match, a whatever match. Just, it didn't need the cell. And you're calling it a main event, and he's still the United States champion. You can't just bump up the mid-card title and make it a main event title already. You know, like, I don't...
They opened the show with it, though, Credo.
I know, but still...
They did it right.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Definitely opening the show was the right way to do that. But, you know, Owens, I thought, was great. The only thing I didn't really like was... The whole Jericho came into the cell. Like, the whole point of the cell is that nobody can get in, and there's always that one chance somebody comes in. And honestly, when that crowd popped, I thought Triple H was coming down, because I figured, oh, okay, this is what's going to happen. But no Triple H in sight, so I don't know what they're doing with that one. But either way, I definitely enjoy the Universal Championship cell. Probably the better than the women's match almost. I don't know. I have to watch them again, though. But no, regardless, I enjoyed them.
I'm going to disagree with you. I got to go Rusev and Reigns. I feel bad for Rusev, because the guy goes from being the U.S. champion to putting on one hell of a performance in that cell. I mean, that ending where he had him in the accolade on top of the steel steps in the ring with a chain wrapper. How do you not have Reigns tap? I mean, we have John Cena Superman Jr. in this match now. It's just like nothing you can do. You can run Roman Reigns over with a Mack truck and he will still kick out and still won't tap. It's just unbelievable that uh-huh. they're going to force this guy down your throat. If you were going to have Roman win that match, I mean, the brutality that Rusev put on this poor son of a bitch, and nothing worked. It just really annoyed the hell out of me. Now, when you talk the old Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins match, I mean, that carried on over to the next night on Raw, where Seth Rollins came to help out Roman Reigns at the end of that Reigns Y2J match. So, I mean, this has the Survivor Series team implications to it. We're going to basically have a little bit of a balance. Can Roman trust Seth Rollins? And can Seth trust Roman? I mean, but they're going to have to coexist and watch each other's backs because of Kevin Owens and Y2J. So they're really setting up a good storyline on the Raw side. And on the SmackDown side, they're doing the same thing as well. So, I mean, they're doing a very good job of setting up one of the big four, which is Survivor Series.
Definitely. I can't wait for Survivor Series, too, because I'm definitely digging the teams again. And I know it's a little bit different than what we got in the 80s and 90s and whatnot, but I'm kind of curious to see how it goes, because it's good. It's a nice breath of fresh air coming up, because it's not like, oh, we need to book another heavyweight championship match. We need to book another whatever kind of match. It's like we could take a break from all these big feuds and just put people on teams and keep it like it is, a Survivor Series, you know, and we'll get into that when it comes down the line. But yeah, man, for Rusev,
where does he go from here now?
I don't know.
The next night after he puts on the performance of a lifetime, he gets a jackhammer from a part-timer. Again, I have to agree with you. In this case, the part-timer is destroying the roster. Like, there's no point in having him do that. Now, Rusev is not a believable dominant heel because he just got jackhammered like he was nothing by yep. Goldberg, who hasn't been in the ring for 12 fucking years. So great booking, guys. Great job.
There you go. Well, moving right along, regardless, you know, some of our thoughts about that. We have also coming up, Cooter, they just announced this week, 205 Live. It's going to be Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. right after SmackDown on the network. It's going to be basically a cruiserweight show. So they pretty much buried the cruiserweights on Raw, that they have to give them an own hour now just to explain everything going on, because I don't know. It's like they have a title match and then they have six-man tag matches, three-on-threes, two-on-two. And it's like, hey, guys, we don't need to throw all the cruiserweights on Raw just because they're part of Raw. They don't know how to book these guys, just like they didn't know how to book the Divas. So now they're going to give them their own live show on Tuesdays, adding to the hours of wrestling already that we're getting. 3 hours on Monday, 2 hours on SmackDown, and now another hour with this show happening. Then we got another hour with NXT on Wednesdays. Then if people are out there still watching Main Event and Superstars, that's another 2 hours right there. That's unbelievable. There's so much wrestling in a week, Cooter. What the hell is going on now?
Explain something to me. What is the premise of the show? Is it just wrestling? Or
just cruiserweights, man. It's just going to be a cruiserweight show. That's all they've said so far. They really haven't...
Oh, 205. Okay, that's the weight limit. I got you.
Yeah.
I get it. Oh, that was so clever. So fucking clever.
And so that's happening. I don't really like that. I'm sick of these live. We don't need to know that it's live. Granted, okay, that adds a little bit of enticement for the network. Now they're going to have the Cruiserweights live every Tuesday. But I don't know. It's just another freaking hour of stuff. Like, they couldn't integrate these guys on Raw. Now, supposedly, they're still going to be on Raw, but I guess they're not going to have these three-on-three matches anymore. They can actually just have maybe one-on-one matches, and it's just going to be an expansion of that division now with their own show. Is that the right move, or should they have just let them opened up to be on SmackDown as well? Or I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. It's not a bad idea. You want to probably recapture some of that magic that they had from the Cruiserweight Classic. Here's the problem with the Cruiserweight division that I see. We haven't properly built a feud like we've been saying about the Raw Women's division outside of the title. It's been Kendrick and Perkins. And again, we have our tag teams and our three-on-threes. This might be the way where we build up, say, a number one contender. Maybe we can feature more talent, because as far as I can see, we haven't really had too many people outside of Perkins, Kendrick, Cedric Alexander, Lince Dorado. I was under the impression that we were going to get a Zach Gallagher and maybe add some more veterans, like a Tajiri. It's a very thin roster, and unfortunately, not only are we not building any rivalries outside of the title, but even if we could, we're thin on talent. We didn't get a Kota Ibushi. We didn't get a Zack Sabre Jr. We don't have big names for this. I mean, that's a problem. We need a few big names to really make this division mean something, because once we get through Kendrick and Perkins, then what?
No, I know. And I think their problem is that, in my mind, is that they came in the Raw, bringing in the Cruiserweights. Whoever's working backstage and creative, like, they need a new job, because they, I don't think the mentality for me, knowing that the Cruiserweights are on Raw, I did not need to see any backstories. I don't need to see, you know, I don't need storylines for these guys. I'm sorry, but I want to see the fast-paced matches. I don't need a whole history every time somebody comes out or who's doing what.
Exactly.
I just want to see them wrestle. That's it.
Athleticism will sell the show itself. I didn't know half the names in the brackets. I had no idea who they were. There was no storyline behind the matches. It was two guys shaking hands and putting on a fucking show. That's all you need for this division. Let the athletes.
It's that E, man. It's that E in WWE. They think they need to put on a spectacle. They need to put on a whole.
Change it back to F and go fuck yourself. That's what I really feel like saying.
It's amazing, though, because they're doing it with the women, too. The whole Divas Revolution. It's like they can't just have one-on-one feuds. They have to put the whole freaking roster against each other. And it's like, outside of the belt, they don't know how to book everybody. It's like, okay, I understand it's Monday Night Raw. We could focus on one big storyline, but then we can have a Cruiserweight match without having to show them backstage, without having to give them an in-ring promo, any of that. Literally, all they need to do is go out there, do what they've done, and, you know, do what they can do, and just do that high-flying wrestling, man. That's all we want to see. After you build that up after weeks and weeks, then maybe we can start telling a little bit more stories. Granted, Brian Kendrick has probably been saving this division a little bit to try to intrigue some people, but it's too much in the storyline realm. They don't need that. I think they just need to stick to wrestling, man, and I don't know.
I think it's stupid because Vince, for some reason, maybe felt like he had to put that belt on a name that is recognizable by...
Ugh, I don't even get it. Yeah, I know.
Fan.
You poor, know poor guy held it for like a little bit, barely had any time to, you know, to show what he could really do and be like, hey, this is why he's the champion. And
he's not a Vince guy, though. That's the problem. He's not a, you know, storyteller. Yep. And that's the problem. You know, he's just a gifted athlete with a mixed background, where Kendrick can do that and still cut a promo. Because, I mean, seriously, Perkins, as great as he is in the ring, he sounds and talks like a little kid when he's cutting a promo. I'm going to slap the shit out of him myself.
It's just sad because it's like, I feel like every week he could have been coming out there beating every guy in the division. Like this week, it's, you know, he beat Kendrick for the belt, and then, you know, then he could go on to beat Rick Swan, and then they could put him in another match. You know, like he could just keep going down the line and beating all these guys. And it's just like, no, we don't need a whole story now. Of all, and this whole right now, this whole division, I think in my mind, is almost taken away from the guys that you thought were going to be getting the spotlight with this brand split. You know, some of these B plus players, and now it's like they're taking a backseat to these new guys who barely even worked their way up into the division. You know, they didn't really have to go through the grassroots, if you will, of NXT, and you know, for years they literally came in there for a tournament, wrestled twice, and now they're on the main roster. And you know, it sucks for some of the guys who have been there working hard for year after year. Now all these guys come into the division and taking over. So I don't know, maybe this 205 Live will help break up that, to where we could tell the stories and all that stuff on that show, and then on Raw just feature the matches. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to get so crazy into the storytelling about them. And I don't know, hopefully that'll break that up, and now we don't have to have 3-on-3s anymore. We can actually have 1-on-1 matches.
Do you think, say, somebody like Neville is enough to maybe save this division? Because once you get past Kendrick and Perkins, we really don't have much outside of, you know, because I really do like Tony Nese. I really think he's talented. But, I mean, who else do we see as a viable contender? I mean, Rich Swann, maybe not right away.
Yeah, I mean, well, see, with Neville, I think the whole problem is that he's already, you know, been showcased outside of the division. And to put him back in there, granted, okay, Sin Cara is in there, but that's who, nobody cares. Like, he's actually getting life in that division. But, you know, for Neville, I think it's a big step back, because he, you know, he's well beyond, I think, that cruiserweight division. And then I don't think they want to just classify him as a cruiserweight, because I think if he steps foot in that division, It's gonna be you know, his grave, if you will. I don't think he'll be able to break out of it. He's always gonna be in the cruiserweight division, and I think we spoke about it a while ago, to where, you know, I asked Sean Maluda, I was like, how do you step outside of that division, and how could you become like that Rey Mysterio, to where you're always known as a cruiserweight, and then all of a sudden now you're in the main event spots. So I think that'll be hard for Neville. You know, I don't know
because he really hasn't gone very far. I mean, he's been back for how long, and we really haven't seen him utilized in any
way. No, yeah, definitely. I'm just afraid that if he does step foot in there, that's, you know, his last place he'll ever be. Like, he'll never be an IC champ, a US champ, or anything.
Even if he's stuck there, don't you think it's better than doing nothing at all? Because that's what he's doing now, is nothing, unfortunately.
No, yeah, I agree. I hear you on that. But, I mean, coming as like an NXT champion and then coming into the main roster, I feel like they had bigger plans for him, but they're just – I don't know what they're doing with him. And, you know, hey, I would love to see him in there. Definitely turn the division up a little bit, show them what they can do. But I would just hope that they need a plan, because if somebody does break away from this division, and I would like to see Tony Nese do that, because I don't really see him as a cruiserweight as a lot of other people do. And granted, he could be under that 205 weight limit, but, you know, he looks like another character that doesn't need that, you know, the division. So when that day happens, when guys start breaking out of that division and actually just wrestling others, it'll be interesting, because I'm kind of curious how they'll work it, especially having this whole, you know, new branded cruiserweight division. So
yeah, you know what's funny though, it's there's just certain guys that I would love to see compete against a lot of these cruiserweights. Like, I don't want to say AJ Styles because he's bigger, but like a Sami Zayn, I know he's a little bit bigger than 205, but he's still quick, and he's still the same type of guy that I would love to see in that kind of division. I would love to see him, a Kalisto. I would love to see.
How about this? Do you know what were the rules? Let's take a. What were the rules for TNA as far as, you know? Remember, they had the rule, like, if you're the X Division champion, you could definitely, you could, you know, have a title shot at or somebody else, something to that effect. I forget it. I'm not trying to look it up right now. I'm trying to think it off the top of my head. But
are you talking about that feast or famine with the briefcases or something like that?
Well, no. I mean, like, at the end of the day, too, like the X Division champion could, you know, right, get a title shot outside of that division, you know what I mean? To where, I'm not going to get too much into that, but regardless, what if down the line they say that if you're the cruiserweight champion, you could wrestle outside the division, you know, to where, like, hey, if you want to, you know, they'll probably match you up against so-and-so just to showcase something. I don't know. I'm trying to think of an out clause for some of these guys to where, hey, if you become that cruiserweight champion for a while and you pretty much, you know, done everything you could do in the cruiserweight division, how could we use you outside of that? And I think that's what I'm really looking for is, like, how can they break away from this?
Yeah, the problem is that they broke that division down by weight, whereas the X division, there was no weight limit. There was no weight class type of thing. I mean, Samoa Joe, when he was in TNA, was an X division competitor because of his ability to, you know, to be as agile as he is as a big fucking guy. You know what I mean? The only reason why he would always lose that belt would be in those Ultimate X matches where you had to do the cable cross stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? And he was just too big to get there. So, I mean, but in terms of those fast-paced, hard-hitting matches, that's what that was about. That wasn't about being a cruiserweight, even though, I mean, a lot of those guys were smaller. I mean, your Daniels, your AJ Styles, Christ, your Sen Shis, for God's sakes. You know what I mean?
Yep. Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's going to be an hour show, so it's just going to be like any other sideshow they have, a B-show. NXT's an hour. Main event, Superstars an hour.
We just spent more time talking about the Cruiserweight division than was actually on Raw.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, just moving right along, we'll keep talking about it. Once again, remind everybody, if you head on over to AnotherWrestlingPodcast.com, you can Facebook us, tweet us, send us an email, send us messages, let us know what we're talking about and what maybe your ideas are about this. But Cooterman, the dead man, is coming back for the 900th episode of SmackDown, which is actually going to be at Mohegan Sun, not too far away from us.
When is this?
This is going to be on November 15th.
Okay. So basically what you're trying to tell me is the Undertaker has just started walking down the aisle. So by the time his segment is up, he should just be turning the lights up by then. Yeah.
Does this mean he's drafted to SmackDown, or is he just making a one-time? Because they never really drafted him either. So the last time he appeared was that Hell in a Cell for WrestleMania 32. So this is the first time the dead man has cometh.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see what they do with him. I mean, they could have a little run-in with Shane, maybe, you know what I mean? But, I mean, he's always been known as a SmackDown mainstay. So, I mean, it's very fitting for him to show up on SmackDown now that it's actually a brand as opposed to the way where the last couple of years he would just show up on Raw. You know, so I mean, it's cool. It'll be cool to see him on there again. Hopefully, I hope he starts going down the aisle now, so he doesn't hold up, you know, half hour of a 2 hour show. But you know,
well, it's been over 6 months since we've seen him. Now, do you think they're gonna start working the plans for WrestleMania? Like, could we? Is it just an appearance? Like, SmackDown 900, I'm here, then that's it. Or are they gonna start setting some wheels in motion for a possible? I don't know, Rumble match, a Mania match, what? I don't know.
I mean, who could we even see him up against anymore? I mean,
the only person everybody's talking about is Cena. That's the only thing people are talking about as a Taker match this year. So if that happens, could be his last match. I don't know what they're doing, but that's just talk from, you know, the dirt sheets and whatnot. But I don't know, man. I don't know who you put him up against anymore.
If it's not Cena, then I really couldn't tell you who.
And if you do Bray Wyatt again, he better lose to Bray Wyatt. Like, you can't just have these guys, you know. I don't know. It's still early, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
How many Undertaker repeats at a WrestleMania do we have to see? I mean, we've had 3 Triple H matches, 2 Shawn Michaels matches, and 2 Kane matches. I don't want another repeat. 2 Bray Wyatt matches. It's basically just padding your record in repeats. It's not cool.
It was such a big week that was, but regardless, we're going to be talking to the man who seemed to have started it all. We're going to talk to Colt Cabana coming up right now. It's Colt Cabana, straight out of the shy, Mr. Shake and Bake, Colt 45, wrestling because it feels alive, great memories and good times. Said no to corporate America, give it up for your favorite character, Cabanarama with his headband on. Joining us today is a true Renaissance man. He's a wrestler, a comedian, an actor, a commentator, an entrepreneur. The man can do it all and has done it all. Colt Cabana is here today. Thanks for joining us, Colt. How's it going?
Oh, very nice. I like that introduction. Thank you very much. A Renaissance man. That would make me Danny DeVito, right? Who the Renaissance man was?
That's it. Well, before we get into it, you know, how happy are you about the Chicago Cubs getting into the World Series?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me how happy I was for Danny DeVito, which I don't know. I am stoked. And what's crazy is I was wrestling for Ring of Honor in Florida when they got into the World Series. And, like, this is a thing. I've been going to games since I was a child. My mother, who's 70 years old, you know, she made me a Cubs fan. I would come home from school every day, and she would always be watching the games, and she's been going since she was a child. So, to be able to see them get into the World Series is just, it's giving me goosebumps right now. So I was a little sad that I was wrestling, but I've made sure Friday, I took a day off of work of professional wrestling on Friday for the Cubs' first game in Chicago, the World Series. I can't go to the game, but I'm going to be around Wrigleyville, and I'm super excited. The whole city is super excited.
What really blows my mind is that, you know, Back to the Future was a year off in that, where if it would have happened last year, that would have been really something. But nonetheless, I hope they win it all. So, but why you're here? You're here because, you know, Wrestling Road Diaries 3 is on the way. After the success of Wrestling Road Diaries 1 and 2, which is a documentary films that chronicle life on the road as independent wrestlers, your newest title, Wrestling Road Diaries 3, Funny Equals Money, featuring yourself, Scottish star Grado, and Japan's Kikutaro, available to ship on November 6th and also on streaming on November 16th at digitalcult.com. What was it like to be on the road with these guys while filming, and what can the fans expect from the DVD?
Yeah, so this is, obviously the first two were so successful. The first one, I think the most, because it had Daniel Bryan literally a couple months before he went to WWE and then became the mythological legend that he became, you know?
Yep.
Did I screw it up? Mythological? There it is. But yeah, you know, the series that we've done was because in my head, you know, I've been on the independent wrestling scene now. This is my 18th year in the indies, and you never, like, you just hear the word indies, but no one's ever really, really documented, like, how our lifestyle is and what it is. And so that's what the original one was Daniel Bryan and I had been doing so many weird indies over the years, and no one really knew the life except the people in that world. So that was our idea to document it. And then from there, it was so successful, you know, I decided to start making some more. And so the third one is about comedy wrestling, comedy in wrestling, comedic wrestlers. And I've considered myself that for a long time now. And I can go back and forth because I'm pretty versatile in the ring. But that's my true love, is making people laugh while wrestling professionally. And there's two other people in my head that are the greatest at this also, that are like unsigned and uncontracted. And that's Grado from Scotland and Kikutaro from Japan. And of course, Kikutaro is a legend. He's a legend in Japan for this style of comedy wrestling, including, you know, like doing comedy matches in front of 50,000 people at the Tokyo Dome and Budokan Hall and stuff. So we traveled around, and that part enough is funny because it's three, you know, silly, goofy guys. But also we dissect like how comedy wrestling is, how it works and why it works, and how, like, sometimes it looks like it could just be simple to do, but you really have to be really talented and skilled in order to become a comedy wrestler, which I know sounds weird, but it's really true. It's a hard art to do.
Definitely. Now, how long were you guys together on the road to film this? And what about these kind of documentaries is, would you say, the most difficult about doing them?
We did a long weekend. So I think it was like 5 days traveling around. And, the first one was like 10 days. Wrestling Road Diaries 1 was 10 days. The second one was like maybe 5 or 6. And this one was 5. I don't know if it's hard for me. I produced it in terms of I brought the guys over. I kind of had a vision. But Jack Ettinger is the guy who filmed it with us and edited it. And he's really the unsung hero of this whole thing. So he's a filmographer out of Chicago. He works with a lot of bands, and he also works with freelance wrestling in Chicago. So, you know, it's kind of like my idea of like, hey, let's try to document this, let's try to story this, and I'll get different parts and different pieces. But he's really he's the puzzle man at the end of the day.
Sure. Now, a lot of fans know you, of course. Some people have gotten to know Grado briefly while he was on TNA, But was there much of a learning curve for both of them, for Grado and Kikutaro, while touring that weekend? Did their comedy translate well with American fans, or was there any problem with that?
That's a good question, because Grado wrestled Tracy Smothers in one of the weirdest matches of all time in Cleveland for AIW. And that's the fun part, is we document that, you know? So, and that's part of it. It's like, not all these jokes aren't going to hit. And there's some weird stuff in that, and that's part of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I had some stuff too that didn't really hit that well. So it's not just those guys. But yeah, there's some hits and some misses. And so, like, you know, this movie isn't like, here's the best of comedy wrestling.
Yeah.
It's here's what works and what doesn't work. And so there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work. And we show that too.
Definitely. Now,
I shouldn't. I have, at the end of the day, the most control, and I shouldn't let my stuff that bombs be on the movie, but I do for the sake of the piece, you know?
Sure, definitely. Now, do you think comedy is missing in today's wrestling world, or is there just enough, or is there room enough for more?
Oh, I think there's almost maybe too much now. Like, well, at least on the indie scene, you know, it's because I think WWE and the indie scene are two completely different animals. They're not the same, I don't think, and they sell different things. And we talk about this a little bit in the movie, but, you know, I started in 99. And so when I kind of started to like really understand what I was doing in wrestling, say 2003, 2004, what I was doing wasn't being done on shows trying to make people laugh. You know, that was the scene of like a lot of people were emulating Japanese wrestling on the indie scene. Low key was like the big deal, and the way he hit, the way he hit people. And so the idea of me trying to make people laugh wasn't really a thing on the American indie scene. So, that's when I started to really like, okay, I want to get as good as I can at this because nobody's doing it. And as that time has passed, like you come to a lot of these shows and now there's whole shows based on that. There's a promotion in Ohio called Old Time Wrestling. You know, Chikara has a lot of that, instilled in it, if not most of it. So, I think there is a lot, but I don't think there's a lot of great comedy wrestling, and there's always room for great any kind of wrestling, but comedy happens to be my favorite.
When you began training at the Steel Domain in Chicago, your trainers were Ace Steel and Danny Dominion. At that point, when you started training, did you know you wanted to be a comedic wrestler, or did that come later on?
No, not at all. Yeah, that's funny. I was telling someone the other day, like, Ace and Danny thought I was like a mute. Like they didn't think I knew how to talk. Because, you know, when I came to the school, like all I wanted to do was be a wrestler. And I understood the idea of respect. And I understood the idea that I didn't know what I was doing and these guys do, and I'm paying them money to teach me. So it's not my job to start talking or, you know, my only job is to listen. And that's what I did. And then kind of when I started coming to my own, they're like, well, where did this come from? And I was like, well, now I feel comfortable around you. And I didn't before. So I kind of went in very, like a fresh piece of clay, I guess, you know, like I was like, here's me. I love wrestling. Mold me and teach me how to do this. And they did. And then, you know, I would say it took me about 5 years to kind of get good at the basics and get good who I was, and then to really understand what I was doing with my art. And then at that point I was able to then kind of go off the track or the beaten path, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for everyone. You know, you need a real good foundation. And I always kind of say a phrase, I don't have it correctly, but I'll try to remember what it is off the top of my head. Is like, in order to break the rules, you got to know the rules, you know? So, and that's kind of what I kind of did. Is like, I do break a lot of rules as a comedic wrestler. And I do that because I know the rules and I know them really well.
Now, being what we like to call the founding father of wrestling podcasts with The Art of Wrestling,
hey,
you've also helped launch Pro Wrestling Tees into a bigger market. Did you ever imagine how influential you would become being on the outside of the big companies? Meaning, you know, did you ever think anyone could have ever done that much without being on a national platform to start with?
Yeah, it's such a good point. And, you know, it's funny, before I got signed with WWE, when I got signed with WWE, I took a pay cut. And not saying I was making a lot of money as an independent wrestler, but as the bottom tier of a WWE wrestler, I wasn't making that much money. And, you know, you can go back and look what those guys were making as a developmental wrestler in 2007. So I knew that, like, I could make a living as an independent wrestler. So I'm not saying that I knew that there was tons of money out there or whatever it might be. But I knew like there were, the idea of kind of being, you know, quote unquote famous on the independent scene was a thing. Like you didn't need to have to go to big time arena wrestling in order to make a living or get by. So obviously when I got fired from the WWE, like that was my goal, was to try to recreate that and do that. And so am I surprised there's such a big market? I'm not surprised. I'm almost surprised that I figured out how to tap into it, if that makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, because I just did what I just did what I liked to do, and I loved in 2009, I loved podcasts. I loved them so much. Nobody was really doing the wrestler to wrestler podcast, or the wrestler to wrestler in podcast. They were doing it in comedy, and I was loving that genre. And I just couldn't wait for them to do it in wrestling. So I started it, just thinking this was something that I loved. I bet this is something other people would love. And then also, you know, you can go back years, and people will always tell you that I was one of the original guys on the gimmick tables, always selling merch. And I did that because I was trying to make a living. Like, you know, I'd rather, if I could try to sell a couple more t-shirts or a couple more pictures, then I didn't have to go do a job from 9 to 5, and I could sustain this wrestling lifestyle that I've tried to, you know, learn to do. So it's almost like I took that idea of that, you know, the gimmick table at a show, and then with the help of Ryan at One Hour Tees, together we made an internet gimmick table for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's why it's successful. So it's not like, it's funny because I have a business degree, but it's not like I went like, business plan, this is how you do it. It was just like,
yeah,
here's what I like. Let's, you know, hey, let's see if other people are down with it. If not, whatever. Like, you know, even if a couple people are into it, that's a success. But it turns out like a lot of people have been into it.
Definitely.
Both pro wrestling team and the podcast genre, you know.
Definitely. Now, you've mentioned before in interviews that your earliest memory of pro wrestling was seeing Andre the Giant get his hair chopped off by Big John Studd and Ken Patera. That happened to be right here in our very own backyard of Poughkeepsie, New York, where we actually saw you compete earlier this year for Global Force Wrestling. Did you happen to know that was the arena where it happened when you wrestled there?
Yeah, when I met you guys there, I did. And someone had told me that, and it was kind of gave me chills looking back at it. I love that I get to wrestle in these venues with all this history. It's so fun to me. And that was amazing. And, you know, like wrestling at a Korakuen Hall in Japan, mm-hmm. and you can just go on YouTube and see all the legendary battles. You see Brody, you see Hansen and Gordy and Dr. Death going through the exact same Korakuen Hall that, you know, that I would wrestle in. And like, to me, that's so romantic. And Croydon, I wrestled in Croydon in England for All-Star Wrestling, Fairfield Hall. And like, you go back and you could look and you could see Mark Rocco and Johnny Saint, and you could see Haystacks and Big Daddy. And like, you're just like, man, I'm in the same locker room these guys were in. I'm in the same, you know, ring. And the same idea of like, they sold tickets just to watch you as a performer. So
it's like you came full circle, right? You know, from seeing you on TV to actually being there now.
Or like, it's a real, like, you know, no matter how, like, if you think your career is awful or whatever it might be, it's like a real, like, shot in the arm. It's like, hey, you're doing the same thing that these guys did. And so it's something to be proud of.
Now, Wrestling Road Diaries 3, available to ship on November 6th and for streaming on November 11th at digitalcult.com. Do you have any future plans for a Wrestling Road Diaries 4 in the early stages?
Oh, well, like, no. But a little bit of me wants to do, you know, Marty DeRosa and I do comedy, and where we watch bad, kind of bad or weird or obscure wrestling, and we have a comedy show based on that. I'd like to tour that. We've done that as a tour, and I'd like to maybe film that. Or I'd like to do one international, too, like possibly Japan or possibly England. But they're so, if you've noticed, for the most part, all the Wrestling Road Diaries have been in my car within the Midwest or the Midwest or driving region. You know, that way we can keep costs down. So that would be a big cost to overtake. But I mean, you know, as long as people keep buying and they stay away from, you know, doing it in illegal ways, and that's why takedownpiracy.com is there to help. But, you know, as long as we can fund that, then, like, if that's possible, I'd love to be able to do that.
Definitely. Well, Colt Cabana, we thank you so much for joining us today. And I'm sure they already know where, but could you just let everybody know where they can find you and find the videos, find the merch and all that?
Yeah, everything is, like, my hub is ColtCabana.com. You can go see me. Come see. I'll be there shaking hands and signing babies. But my Twitter and my Instagram is at Colt Cabana. And then all my merchandise is at ColtMerch.com, including the Wrestling Road Diaries 3, which I'm so proud of. And we're pre-sailing now. You can buy it now. If you buy it now, while supplies last, there's a free autographed cover card of the DVD of me, Grado, Kikutaro that we all signed and then we'll put that in for free if you buy it online.
Well, thank you so much, Cole. We really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, this has been great. Thanks so much. I'm glad that we finally get to do this, too. I appreciate it.
This is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, and you're listening to another wrestling podcast in association with CelebVM. Order a personal video message from me and many other wrestlers and celebrities now. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
That's right. Head on over to celebvm.com/AWP.
Get a personal video message for yourself or as a gift for someone else. For personal connections, shout-outs, birthdays, proposals, weddings, and much more. Enter your details about yourself so the celebrity can record a personal video message especially for you, including details such as your name, age, birthday, hobbies, or whatever else you include. As soon as the video has been recorded, you'll get an email with your link so you can share it on social media or download and keep it. Celebrities record videos as and when they can, usually within 2 weeks. But if you want a video for a specific date and it does not look like it will arrive in time, you can cancel it and get an instant refund at the click of a button. There are hundreds of celebrities to choose from and many more joining every day. Search by category or genre. Buy a gift voucher, get updates and offers, and encourage your favorite celebrities to join so they can connect with fans in a fun and unique way, raise money for their charities, and much more. So order your video now for yourself or for someone else.
Celebrity Video Messages and Another Wrestling Podcast team up. Be sure to head on over to celebvm.com/AWP. All right, AWP fans, listen up.
Yeah, we're talking to you.
We are a listener-supported podcast.
The show is created by wrestling fans for wrestling fans.
Each week, we bring to you one-of-a-kind interviews with pro wrestling's greatest superstars from yesterday and today.
We do this at no cost to you, the fans. Here are a few ways where you can support us and give us our love.
It's very simple. Rate us and review us. Go over to iTunes or Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn, whatever it is. Just tell all your friends about it.
Follow us on all that social media stuff. Whatever you kids are doing these days, you can give us a like, follow us, a poke, a point, a German suplex if you're Brock Lesnar, whatever you want.
Lastly, if you are an ultimate AWP fan, head on over to prowrestlingtees.com/anotherwrestlingpodcast and purchase an official AWP shirt. There's more than one.
Thanks for supporting us and enjoy the show, bitches. Cole Cabana, he's so awesome. I really love that guy. Jesus.
Yeah, man. I can't wait to see Wrestling Road Diaries 3. Guys, get it. Order it. Tell Colt that you heard about it right here on another wrestling podcast. But Cooter, each and every week, what sets us apart from every other podcast is that, you know, we come up with evergreen topics. So whether you're listening to episode 1 or 131 or even 132, you know, there's going to be something new that you can listen. It doesn't matter what time of the week, time of the day, what time of the year, you can listen to the show anytime. Go back in history, and you're going to hear, you know, a great topic that we're talking about. And I think one big thing that we can get into is comedy in wrestling. We talked a little bit about with Cole Cabana, how, you know, his new Wrestling Road Diaries 3 is about comedians, the comedic wrestler. but, you know, I think everybody wants to be that guy. They want to be that Hogan. They want to be that Cena. They want to be that top wrestling guy. You know, they want to be that the number one guy, right? But not everybody can do that. There's got to be, you know, the sideshows, the B-Squad. You know, it's too serious at times, but comedy has been such a big part of the wrestling business for years, from the wrestlers, guys like Cole Cabana, Grado right now, Santino Marella, and so on. There's been a lot of comedic wrestlers, but it's just overall, comedy in wrestling, Cooter, it's like a cornerstone of professional wrestling. Like, you have to have the ring, you have to have the wrestlers, you got to have comedy, you got to have these kind of matches. You know, it's definitely one of the elements into the bigger picture, right?
I mean, there's the three things that I will always remember about certain things in wrestling. It was either an amazing match, there was a ridiculous high spot, or there was something so funny that I pissed myself. And some of the biggest stars have been shaped because of comedy. I mean, look at somebody like The Rock, who was pushed as this baby face that nobody could stand, turned heel and added a little bit of comedy to his heelish figure, and lo and behold, people started getting behind him, and he just got funnier and funnier every week, and now he's the most electrifying man in entertainment today.
That's right. You know, from wrestlers to even, like, storylines, you know, there's been some ridiculous storylines. You can even think about Mae Young giving birth to a hand.
Like, I was just say that. Oh my god! That's
like, if you take yourself seriously and you take yourself seriously talking about pro wrestling, then you have to go back to that Mae Young birth of a hand moment. That's just one of many. I mean, we can name tons of things. Like even Gene Snitsky causing a woman to have a miscarriage.
It's not my fault, but that's not really comedy, Credo.
It's dark comedy.
If you're laughing at that, you're a sick bastard.
He punted the baby into the audience, like. You know, it's just like a lot of these bizarre storylines. Even, you know, even the time they had Chaz from the Headbangers, he dressed up like Beaver Cleavage. That was his name. There's a lot of weird things going on through the years. I mean, like, I'm not going to just sit here and laundry list them.
All right, now let's do some of these. How about DX doing their impression of The Nation?
Oh, that was probably one of the classic things you could ever think about, especially Jason Sensation. We've had him on a bunch.
Yes.
You know, that guy, that made that guy's career right there, being Owen Hart with the greatest Owen Hart impersonation. And
I am not a nugget. I'm a Black Hawk, damn it. Oh, a soul survivor. Woo!
I remember watching that, you know, live and happening, and I just remember how it was just so much fun, like, watching it live compared to just watching it on YouTube today. I mean, it was it's definitely – you need that comedy, man, because you can only be – you can't have, like, a serious two-hour program or three-hour program now, if you will, without that little bit of a break of a comedic comedy relief, you know what I mean? So it's just one of those things, like, everybody wants to be that top guy. But not everybody's saying, like, hey, I want to be the entertainment. I want to be the funny guy, you know? So
let me ask you this. Would Triple H be as big as he is today without the comedy aspects from DX?
Oh, that's a good question. I
mean, they started off career, very man, controversial. Yeah. You know what I mean? But then, you know, as he took over the group, you know, there was more comedy as opposed to just him and Sean suck at this and suck at that, being rebellious.
Yeah. It's a good question, man, because, like, I'm just picturing it right now, and it's like, you know, it was such a big part of his career, having that comedic side, and then it, you know, it turned him into what he was, you know, the King of Kings after that. You know, he got serious after that, to when DX kind of folded, and then he would have, like, the little, you know, going back and forth with it, but... You know, it definitely rounded out his career, being, you know, he wasn't like the goofy kind of a wrestler like a Colt Cabana or Santino Marella, but he was having fun, you know, a lot of funny, goofy things.
Yeah.
But, you know, but at the same time, you know, it definitely showed him in a new spotlight, got him a lot more fans, and then, you know, it just helped build his character, I believe. So it was just definitely a big part of his character building.
I mean, even today we're using a lot of comedy in wrestling. I mean, let me throw some names out there. And probably one that drives me bonkers having to say this is Dean Ambrose, because I don't know what the hell this guy is supposed to be. He's supposed to be a lunatic, so we're supposed to think that he's crazy. Yet, I mean, he can't stop with these corny, cheesy, funny lines. So it's like, you know, we can't really take that lunatic side of him serious because of the comedy.
And he has those silly moves, too, in the ring, like the falling through the ropes every time, you know, like, and it comes back. Little ridiculous moves, but...
All right. Jericho and Owens, another good example. I mean...
Jericho is so versatile, man, you know, from...
Oh, God.
Anything, from being a cocky prick to being a funny guy to just being, you know, he knows what the crowd wants at this age. And, you know, the man comes up with, like, you know, catchphrases left and right. You know, he knows what works and what clicks. And, you know, even the stupid list thing has just been catching on. So
God.
It's like, it's those little comedy bits that, you know, just... keep him going.
I gotta say, he's probably been the best at constantly reinventing himself and staying fresh. Yep. I mean, granted, he's taken, like, his vacations and he's gone away for a while, but when he comes back, he just has a whole new vision for how he wants to be, and he pulls it off every time. I mean, his last major title run, where he was coming down with the suit and tie,
yeah.
And, you know, I'm the best in the world at everything that I do. And he was so serious. But now it's he's completely different. You know, he just keeps it fresh. And I got to respect him for it. How about the New Day?
Yeah, and the New Day, when they started, man, everybody was like, well, let's see what they're doing. Yeah, it was kind of weird at first, but then it was like, oh, all right. And then they started, they got more mic time. They allowed to grow, and, you know, they were given the opportunity to be like, okay, well, let's see where it goes from here. Let's see where it goes from here. And they got freaking cereal out of it, Bootios, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's how it grew into, like, something crazy. They are at a point, though, where they're kind of losing steam, and they definitely need to take a back seat right now and let other teams come up with the championship and kind of let them reinvent a New Day again. But all in all, man, you know, they definitely took three guys who probably weren't going to do much. They were getting, you know, so many guys on the roster. That's what they had to have the brand split.
Oh, yeah.
And so they kind of had to find themselves, and they kind of just had to do something this ridiculous to be noticed.
This has got to be like the one time where WWE got lucky, because like we were saying, this gimmick started off and people were like, what the hell? And
yeah.
Then they started hating them because they were like, what the hell? And so it's like, okay, the crowd hates them. Let's turn them heel. So they start heeling on these people. And then liking the way that they're heeling on them.
Yep.
And it was just like, we're trying to follow you guys, and you keep flipping. The fans kept flipping the script on these guys.
I think, yeah.
So, I mean, the fans really did make the New Day what they are.
Definitely. And I think they're a perfect example of getting, just letting things play out. You know what I mean? Yeah. Kind of like, okay, if they came out that first time or second time, you're like, this isn't working. No, you kind of have to let them keep going with it, let them develop it more. And you kind of can't expect that quick turnaround. You need to kind of just let this go and see how the audience reacts and see what they want to see. And, you know, like if you watched the first two appearances they made as a New Day, you would have been like, uh-uh. They came out like, I thought they were going to be like
a choir.
Yeah. They were doing like the whole church thing. So like, how do you go from that to what they are now is amazing, of just, you know, turning that, you know, they were given a ball that wasn't a ball. It was a triangle, and they're told to throw it in that round hoop. And they're like, well, we'll just do it our own way. And you know what I mean? So, it definitely, I think New Day will definitely go down as one of the most organic, you know, comedy groups in wrestling, just for how they were developed on the spot. Because, like you said, you know, they came out I love the song, you know, the whole Christian thing, the whole singing thing, you know what I mean? And you definitely, if you watch their promos to what they are now, it's just amazing how it's like, it's developed. And that's,
did we mention they're going to be the longest reigning WWE tag team champions ever? They're going to beat Demolition's record one day, I swear to you.
I know, we're going to go on Facebook Live and talk about that when that day happens.
Well, but there's been guys who have failed at this comedy shit too. I mean, not that they failed, but they couldn't keep it fresh. Like, they tried it with Gallows and Anderson earlier this year when they were facing the New Day, and they did that whole
storyline,
and it was funny like the first time they did it, and they got lucky. But then they just, you know,
they were trying to give them a character, and like, they don't need characters. Like, no, they came
just
off
ass kickers, bro.
Exactly. They came off of New Japan strong, and then like another thing that happens to these guys in the back, to where it's like, well, let's give them something, you know? Like, they didn't need that. They don't need that. It's like, they're like you said, they're the ass kickers. They don't need this stupid comedy in them. And like, it works for some people. It doesn't work for everybody. And some people, they just got to realize not everything needs to be funny, and just, you know, let it go with that.
They don't need the catchphrases like, say, somebody like an Enzo and a Kaz.
Yeah.
You know, so these are the guys who, they come out there, they spit their catchphrases, and then Enzo hits them with a little bit of comedy, and, you know, the crowd loves you. They don't need that. So, I mean, it works to some people's benefit, and other teams, you know. Nobody really cares. It just doesn't work for you. But it is probably one of the most important aspects in wrestling now, back then, and definitely in the future.
Definitely. You know, from all these characters and some of the storylines we can keep going on and on about, you know, comedy just plays even more of a part in today, especially with the network. They have, like, their own comedy Jackass show, if you will, Swerved. So even bringing comedy into the forefront on their network of making a total comedy show,
The Edge and Christian show.
So it's, you know, it's more than wrestling. You know, it's that variety show, but it's definitely a big part of comedy.
I can't wait for a season two of Camp WWE, too.
Okay, Camp WWE is so ridiculous, and I love it, because when the previews did nothing for it, justice, like, you didn't even know that they were going to be cursing in it like they did.
I know.
So, like, as soon as you watched, I think, like, the first 10 seconds, like, you heard Vince drop the F-bomb, and yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch this. I'm going to watch the rest of this.
Yeah.
So, like, they couldn't do that in the previews, but, yeah, that's another little sleeping comedy that they have.
Yeah, and they wouldn't even put it on the live stream. It was only available on demand, so you knew it had to be good.
And now into another realm, there's even wrestlers doing stand-up comedy. We've gone to the Hacksaw Jim Duggan show over at Laugh It Up Comedy Club in Poughkeepsie. Even Jim Cornette's. Jake the Snake's going to be here in 2 weeks. You know, it's funny because it's like not only are they going to be telling road stories, or they do tell road stories, but it's also adding just funny stories that we don't get to hear as fans, like life on the road, you know, traveling with certain people. It's just that comedy element is such a big part in pro wrestling, right?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, I've always looked forward to stuff like that because we get little, you know, bits and pieces from some of these guys if you listen to other podcasts. So when they do interviews, and like one of my favorite Jake stories that he's ever told was on Piper's podcast, where he tells a story about the British Bulldog. So, I mean, that's an awesome clip. Find it on YouTube. It is absolutely hilarious. And that's the thing. You know who really broke the mold for these guys to really do this was Mick Foley.
He was definitely
the first one who really started doing actual stand-up where he was telling jokes, not just doing the road stories. So, I mean, some of these guys will just tell you really hilarious stories, and some of these guys, you know, maybe might actually do a set. So, I mean, I'd like to see what Jake does.
No, yeah, and, you know, going back to the topic in comedy, it's just everything we've talked about, from stand-up comedy to comedy shows on the network to comedic wrestlers to comedic storylines. It's such an integral part of pro wrestling. And tell us what your thoughts are out there, too. Like I said, if you're listening to the show, tweet us, Facebook us. You can find all the links at anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. It's 2016. You should know what to do by now. Head on over there.
Seriously, get a smartphone, you fuckers.
There you go. So, guys, you know, if you want to add to what we were saying, please let us know. You can also give us a call on the AWP hotline. It's free of charge. We're not going to charge you 99 cents or dollar an additional minute or anything like that. It's free. It's basically
a call. We're not Eugene Okerlund, okay? We're not trying to scam you.
So let's see who we can get for next week. It's 802-297-7672, 802-AWP-7672, and you call it up, you're going to hear me to leave a message. Like, you don't have to worry about it. You can call day or night, any time of day, and just leave a message. That's all it is. You're not calling me. I'm not going to wake up and answer your phone call. So just call the hotline and, you know, cut us a promo. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us how much we're right, how much you're wrong, anything. Just tell us whatever's on your mind, basically. So 802-297-7672.